Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch, and one woman called her the over 40 guru to watch in 2017. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host, Amanda Thebe. Today, we're going to talk about sex, baby. I'm excited about this conversation because I feel as though it's something that maybe is a little bit taboo and people don't have the conversation. But I think it's a very important part of going through menopause and aging and also having long-term relationships. So today, I'm excited to have a guest on the show called Cha-Cha Sun. Cha-Cha is previously a pharmaceutical executive, but now is a women's health entrepreneur. She is actually the CEO of Demiva Incorporated, and she does some wonderful products for women that are 100% natural. She was getting very frustrated when she could see that any of the products out there for vaginal health were full of chemicals and hormones. And so her line is actually wonderful. It's 100% natural, and she sells vaginal skincare and beauty products to some pharmaceutical chains and health food stores. She has a background in genetics, finance, and the pharmaceutical industry, and she now spends her days on taboo abolishing. I love that. You're the taboo abolisher. Speaking to women on their health and beauty needs and generating sales and raising money for a fast-growing company. And the reason I've asked Cha-Cha on the show is because I had a conversation with her a few months ago, and I just thought it was so great, her approach to having long-term intimacy with partners. And so here she is. So welcome, Cha-Cha, to the show.
Thank you so much, Amanda. I'm very excited to be here, you know, share kind of my learnings. And, you know, this really started because, you know, as you said, I was looking at vaginal products for myself, and I wanted and still want, you know, long-term intimacy with my partner. And knowing that vaginal dryness affects most women after menopause and that it deteriorates over time, I thought, what am I going to use? What am I going to do? I was trying to educate myself. And then as I started educating myself, I started learning about how little there is being done in research on women's health. And this has led me to start my own journey in terms of consulting experts, you know, all across the world, including yourself, you know, on how to manage, you know, my own menopause and then how to transfer that knowledge to other women. And so, you know, I just thought I'd share kind of a story that I couldn't believe. It was one of my learning exercises. I was sitting on a panel, and the panel consisted of two gynecologists, a sex therapist, and a couple of psychologists. It was a women's health panel, and it was sponsored by a pharmaceutical company that makes hormonal creams. And one of the sex therapists said she had a file folder in her office that was maybe about kind of 5-6 inches thick of men writing in saying, my wife won't have sex with me. And she said on the panel, well, ladies, if he's not having sex with you, he's having sex elsewhere. And I thought, like, my mind just blew up. I was like, how is this possible, you know, that this is the 21st century and she's telling women that she can't say things like that? I'm like, that is so wrong. But ironically, over the course of my learning and in talking to a lot more sex therapists, they actually very much sort of say the same thing. And I think this also applies to couples in, you know, same-sex marriages and relationships and so forth. But the general gist of it being that if there's one partner, whether it's the male or the female, and it can certainly apply to the female as well, you know, who is not satisfied, you know, then that can create a lot of tension and stress in a relationship. And then I think we layer on these days technology. So one of my, you know, great sex therapist friends, she was treating about 5-6 years ago, 90% of her clientele were women and men or couples in intimate relationships who are having intimacy problems. And now 90% of her clients are actually men in with sex addiction problems, primarily related to online porn.
Wow.
Yes.
Because it's just so much more accessible.
It's just everywhere. And I think it's something like every day there are 38 billion, you know, hits on online porn, men and women alike. So I think, you know, the issues around long-term intimacy have just gotten tougher and tougher, you know, over time. And, you know, and so how do we solve them? And honestly, I think it's just from a lot of work on, you know, from the side of both parties. And then, you know, in this day and age with, you know, busy careers, busy households, busy lives, declining hormones, of which I'm certainly suffering from, you know, to find that extra energy to be putting into intimacy in a relationship is really tough.
Yeah, and I've experienced it as well. And I've experienced it from both sides because, of course, it can impact. I'm married to a man and it can impact them as well. Like they can go through a decline. It's well documented as well. And but one of the things that I found that my libido bottomed out, it was terrible. And I know it was from my decline in hormones. And I didn't even have the interest to try and right that wrong. You know, it was almost like there was an apathy there because I didn't even realize. And it was actually only when my husband approached me and just said, I need to tell you that I'm feeling isolated from you and I don't feel like I'm appreciated. And it really hit him hard. And I just didn't even think of that. And I think so part of the problem is the open dialogue as well. And so as soon as we started talking about the fact that I had been ignoring him without even realizing, then we started making small changes. And it wasn't even about us having sex again. It was just about appreciating each other. And I think you've got some real ideas on that, haven't you, on how to make that happen?
Definitely. Well, you know, and this is all just, you know, sort of my synthesis from talking to a lot of women and men and experts, you know, such as my friend Rebecca Rosenblatt. And so, you know, I think the first one that pretty much there's universal agreement on is not to stop. You know, so the experts will say that if you go longer than 6 months without having sex, and sex could be, you know, intercourse with a device, right, or masturbation, or, you know, however you wanted to turn, you know, define sex, but essentially, you know, ideally achieving orgasm, right, ideally achieving lubrication. And so if you go longer than 6 months without sex, it's really hard to go, the decline can start from there, right? So that's sort of a magic number. And it's just like exercising. It's just like, you know, a lot of things that we need to do constantly for our own good health. Sex is one of them. And, you know, and especially when you kind of get into mode where, you know, your hormones are wacky, you know, you're tired, right now it's flu season, and, you know, it's just, it becomes sort of the least prioritized aspect of our own health, right? We're just trying to do all the other things. But that's the first one. The second is that it's important to recognize that as we age, our desire and arousal switches flip.
So this is what I'm excited to talk about because I love the way that you have package this desire and arousal. And it just made so much sense to me. So carry on. I just wanted to say that I love this part of your theory about how to help each other.
Well, what happens, and it happens with both men and women, I believe, because, you know, initially it probably happens to women first, because we go through a much steeper hormonal decline through menopause. And with men, they have the same type of hormonal decline, but essentially it takes longer. And so what happens is that when we were younger, we were easily aroused. We could just look at someone and think, oh, wow, you know, he's really hot and I'm aroused by him. And then that led to desire. And then you desired him or her. And so arousal leads to desire when you're younger. When you're older and your hormones are declining, we have to have desire first before we have arousal. So, and, you know, it's hard to get to arousal if you don't desire your partner. And it's hard to desire your partner if in your mind you're thinking, oh, you know, that person didn't take out the garbage last night when I really was, you know, really tired, and that's his job and he didn't do that, you know, or I've got to get up in the morning and get the kids' lunches and that's my job. And now I'm going to have to stare at a big bag of garbage, you know. And so, you know, when we've got all these things, you know, running through our minds, you know, it's hard to get into the mode of desiring, you know, our partners, and then to the mode of arousal. And so that's where it's very, you know, I think it's really key that we take the time, we create the environment, we create the schedule. You know, I remember first when, you know, a lot of experts would tell me that very consistent schedules for sex are, you know, a key aspect of their, you know, protocols. And I was like, wow, that just sounds like so, you know, sort of unromantic and, you know, very unspontaneous. But, you know, I've learned over time, as my hormones have eroded.
Eroded, and, I like that.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, and I'm in a long-term relationship with my partner, that these aspects are really important. Scheduling is really important. Having environments is really important. Adhering to those schedules is really important. And then, as you know, as women in menopause, going through into menopause, you know, in perimenopause, just that influx of hormones is really important too, because they help us, you know, stay youthful, you know, be happy, and, you know, help with lubrication, which is important for long-term intimacy.
I know that, like, we're talking about, like, scheduling and lack of spontaneity. I don't have any spontaneity in my life anymore anyway. I mean, how many people do? How many people are, like, these hopeless romantics? I mean, truthfully, I've had this conversation with my husband, and I've said, the ideal time to have sex with me is 10 o'clock in the morning. Actually, that's the only time I want to have sex. I don't want to do it at 11 o'clock at night when you come to bed. I actually want to go to sleep. And it was really important to have those conversations, because otherwise I'd have this rod in the back of my back and I'd be like, oh, for Christ's sake, the last thing I want to do is have sex with you. But I sort of think that, I know you said it doesn't sound very romantic, but like the idea of knowing that the kids are busy at this time for me and my husband's around, that we could quickly nip into the bathroom and have sex and it's fun still. And so I do actually do that now, even though it doesn't make it feel any more romantic, less romantic, I should say. It hasn't really changed my relationship, but I think that just having that consistency has made me not have the apathy anymore.
Yes.
You know, and I think that it's created a little bit more desire. And I think the reason is you're going back to the constant habit of having sex, because often we don't really feel like it, but when we do it, we're like, oh, well, actually, that wasn't too bad. You know what I mean? That's often what we feel. It was normally enjoyable when you do it. And so I think that just continually trying to have that habit just creates the feeling of enjoyment, and the endorphins obviously start flying as well.
For sure. So, you know, my partner is an athlete and a workout fanatic, and he has worked out, you know, 3 times a week for the last 40 years, I would say, and he just never misses a week. And he always says to me that he hates working out, but he knows he needs to do it. And the hardest part of working out is the first, you know, 10 seconds before you get started, right? And then after he's worked out, he's really glad, and I'm glad too, because he's less hyper, you know? And I think that, you know, we can definitely get into that mode where, you know, it's not just apathy. It could also be, you know, a little bit of dread because of painful sex, right? You know, a little bit of kind of, you know, fear that this is going to hurt, you know, or that this is, you know, I've talked to women who've had like 5-inch tears and gashes, you know, from sex. You know, and, you know, I've heard of, 40% of women likely, after the, menopause have painful sex at least. Yeah. Right. And by painful sex, it's, you know, it's something where women will even use something like lidocaine to numb, you know, the genital area so that they can engage in sex. Right.
Okay. So can we like dig deeper into that then? So like, so we know there's a vaginal atrophy that happens purely because of the drop in, the decline in, or the erosion of hormone. I'm going to use that from now on. That can lead to some vaginal dryness. And that was your first like step into this sort of world. Mm-hmm. But can you talk a little bit more about, you know, what we need to do for pelvic floor health, what some of the solutions are, who are the people we should be going to, to seek help here, because we don't need to continue having painful sex, do we?
That's right. And I would say the ideal situation is that we avoid ever having painful sex, which is certainly possible if we continue to have sex and we continue to be lubricated. And, you know, and I tell the story of a gynecologist I once met with who told me that his 80-year-old patient had the vagina of a 20-year-old. I was like, wow. You know, and the reason she did was because she was very adamant, militant, he said, about having sex routinely at least twice a week at age 80. I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. So, you know, so it's important to continue to have sex. That's number one. Secondly, it's important, I believe, that every woman have an evaluation by a pelvic health physiotherapist by age 40. If you haven't had it earlier, postpartum or for other pelvic conditions, because what happens is our whole pelvis area changes as, you know, parts become weak, other parts become too tense. And so we need to learn to use our pelvic floor properly in breathing, as well as, you know, for sex and intimacy. And I think that's really important. And then, of course, you know, using products that will ensure that sex isn't painful, because if you can imagine when sex becomes painful and you're clenching, you know, that tightens up muscles that you don't want to have tightened up. And then, you know, and then that leads to painful sex. So our goal as women is not to get there once you have painful sex, because once you have painful sex, then it becomes more rehabilitation with a pelvic health physiotherapist. You know, products such as the Demeva products may not help, because if you have so much atrophy, you know, women may need to use a hormonal cream, you know, to restore some elasticity and, you know, a metabolism to that area. And so then, you know, when it gets to that point of painful sex, then it becomes difficult because it becomes rehabilitation, you know, as opposed to prevention. And so we want to try and stay in the prevention mode.
And so as we age, what happens to the lubrication as well? Because I've only experienced like having dryness and lack of lubrication once. And I almost snapped my husband's penis off. And so he was like, you've just got to buy some lubrication. And I was really hesitant about doing it because I don't want to stuff loads of chemicals inside of me, like you said. But the, what happens as we age? Do we constantly need to be using lubrication? Isn't some natural lubrication still there?
So it's two things, actually. So our Bartholi glands, which are the glands that, you know, secrete, lubricating, liquid, essentially they don't go away as we age. So that's the good news. That's the good news is that, you know, theoretically, we should have lubrication, you know, for the rest of our lives, right? So they don't disappear after menopause. But our vaginal tract does become dry because we lose estrogen. Mm-hmm. And when we lose estrogen, our tissues shrink essentially and become atrophied. But just think of it like any other organ, right? Which is that the more exercise and the more metabolism we keep, you know, the better we maintain our organs, our limbs, our brains, et cetera. So it's not a foregone conclusion that every woman's going to have vaginal dryness. And the more you're consistent in your intercourse, the greater likelihood is that you may never suffer from vaginal dryness. Yeah. Right. And that's where we all want to be.
Yes, definitely. That's mm-hmm. awesome. And so now if we go back to talking about intimacy and just having a low libido. So there may be people listening or women listening to this are like, it's okay you saying we have to have constant sex and it needs to be a habit that we need to continue to do, but I just don't have the desire. How do I create the desire to get the arousal? So how does that happen?
I believe in low libido as a foregone conclusion after menopause. Yes, we lose our sex hormones, but the science shows that we're still making testosterone in our ovaries up until, you know, probably at least 65. So while our female sex hormones, such as progesterone and estrogen, go down fairly drastically after menopause, our ovaries are still making some testosterone. And testosterone is the hormone that's most likely associated with libido and aggression, right? We think of it as the male sex hormone, but we also have it as women. So theoretically, libido shouldn't be so much as of a problem or relatively compared to other problems associated with having lower estrogen and progesterone. Progesterone is the nurturing hormone, right? So that's typically the sign that a woman's going into perimenopause is like things that you just like, you know, used to be a lot more nurturing. And, you know, I always say to the men, you know, that thing that you did when you were 28 and she thought it was the cutest thing in the world. And now it's the thing that she hates the most about you.
And then, of course, the estrogen is your happy hormone, so then you're not happy with them anyway.
Exactly. So that is, I would say that it's the cult, that's the culprit, exactly. Like, so it's this mix, right? It's this mix that you've lost your nurturing hormones, and then you've lost your happy hormones, and you still have some testosterone, so you've got some aggression. And is that being manifested in the bedroom or is that being manifested on the road in a road rage? Right? That brings me to the sort of the third aspect that I think is important for long-term intimacy, which is day-to-day kindness and affection. And I think that I believe personally that if you are receiving and giving kindness and affection, then the whole libido kind of aspect will fall into place, Right. Because then you're not having to work so hard to get into the desire mode to move into the arousal mode. Right. But if you're not even feeling any arousal, right, it's important to ask yourself, am I feeling any desire? And is it, and what is it that I'm not feeling that's desirable? You know, and what did I desire about him or her in the past? And, you know, and is it, you know, what is exactly is it? There's a famous, you know, positivity psychologist who did a lot of research and concluded that as humans, we need 12 hugs a day to survive and more than 12 hugs a day to grow, right? And so it was easy to do that with our babies, right? It's much harder, for example, for me to do that right now with my 16-year-old daughter. And I'm lucky if I get in a couple of hugs a day. But I think, you know, my partner and I are very affectionate and, you know, we believe in those hugs and kisses. And he'll say to me, I don't want a peck. I want a real kiss. And, you know, and it's good to be, you know, holding me to those standards and vice versa. Because, you know, when you have daily affection and kindness, I think it makes it easier to get into that desire mode and then into the arousal mode. But if you're not even experiencing anything close to arousal, then I think we really have to look at the desire, right? And because if you're going from 0 to 100, you know, in a couple of minutes, it's just not going to happen.
No, nobody wants that anymore. And I think just as we've matured anyway, it's sex has a different feeling and meaning for us anyway. I think it's less about the physical act and more about the relationship or the, you know, it's about the relationship and just how we feel about each other. I mean, it can still be exciting and stuff, but it's not just like, I'm just going to go and have sex with somebody. I feel like it's changed anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's about the intimacy.
Yeah. And it's just, I like what you said as well, like just reviewing if you're with a long-term partner, what it was about that person that, you know, you did desire initially. And I also think it's okay to not desire them for a time as well. Like, because I think our feelings do ebb and flow for them. And I think that that's what keeps it sort of fresh. And I do have to keep like reminding myself as well and think, you know, like what his great points are. I mean, he's not David Beckham. I know that. And and I'm over that now.
By the way, David yeah. Beckham is smaller than me.
Like, Yes.
I bumped Garner, my partner, I bumped into him in Victoria at a restaurant in California. And we didn't even know it was them, you know, until our waiter pointed it out. And then I said to the waiter, I said, David Beckham is smaller than me.
Oh, no. And you know what? And I don't like the way he talks either, but you're just not allowed to slam David Beckham on my show. That's the only rule I've got, actually. So you've already broken that. So that's fine.
Taboo breaking.
Well, you are the taboo breaker, right? So I just want to review what you said, because I just think there's some great takeaways that we can sort of run with. And one of the first things that has come out of this conversation for me is that don't think that all is lost, right? Don't think that if you've lost that, you think that you have a low libido and you've lost that desire, that that's the end of it, that you're not going to get it back.
Yes, not at all, for sure.
You're definitely fighting some biological elements here, but there's also a mindset. So, like, I love that. I love that we just need to get back into the habit of it. And I sort of feel like I've done that myself as well. And I'm in a better place than I was 6 months ago, but nothing much about me has changed apart from the fact that I've just opened my mind to having sex again.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And it's, you know, it's exactly it. Nothing in life is, you know, a foregone conclusion, especially long-term intimacy, right? And it's got to be something that we work on. And I think that, you know, the takeaways I got from the sex therapist really relate to the fact that we each have to create what works for ourselves, because there's not one formula for everyone. And like you said, you know, desire can definitely ebb and flow. And so, you know, one year might be like this, and the next year might be entirely different. But there is something that's really consistent, which for me is a mantra, which is that, you know, the way I sometimes explain it to women is that, you know, it's not just about desiring someone else. It's also about desiring ourselves. And so to me, it all has to start with the point that we have to desire ourselves. And in desiring ourselves, we have to believe that our pelvic health is crucial and critical to our overall health as we're aging. Because, you know, imagine those days when you had, you know, an itchy vagina, right? Or, you know, or something genital that was bothering you. But imagine having that every day for decades. You know, a lot of women, once we hit kind of painful sex, we just shut down because, of course, that's naturally survival mode, right? Why would we engage in something that's painful? And so, you know, so for me, it has to start with desiring ourselves. That means taking care of our pelvic health. That means if we're not in a relationship, that we use devices, that we masturbate, that we ensure that we're desiring ourselves, you know, to begin with, those good feelings, those great hormones. And then that enables us to engage and be committed to a relationship. And hopefully some of them will last longer than others, but, you know, hopefully a long-term relationship that, you know, that has a very tight, you know, commitment in terms of intimacy. Intercourse doesn't have to be, you know, at the core of a lot of, you know, intimacy, because men have problems as well with erectile dysfunction or impotence after prostate surgery and so forth. But certainly it is important to, you know, have those hormone infusions, you know, and that can be touching, you know, that can be masturbation. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, our traditional, you know, as my daughter would say, heteronormative version of sexual intercourse. But it does have to be about desiring ourselves and desiring our partners. And what we can do in terms of maintaining that desire with our partners, I believe, is a daily, you know, dose of affection.
That's great. And you know, it's such a great reminder as well. I mean, often my husband will come in from work and I'll just go, oh, hi. I don't even have to give him a hug or ask how his day is because I'm too busy. And I've tried to stop doing that because that's probably my progesterone, right? I probably stopped caring. But I do care. And we've even changed our routine. If we sit down and watch the TV together, we now snuggle and watch TV, whereas previously I've never even thought about it because his level of affection hasn't changed, but mine has. And I just forgot about that. You know, I think that's just a natural cause. But once I explained, you know, and I think having that open dialogue as well and really being open in relationships and talking everything through can just lift a lot of the angst that's in the air as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, listen, Chacha, I really enjoyed the conversation today. I hope this has been enlightening for the people listening. I think it will be. If people want to find you or even your products, can you tell me the best place to do that?
Sure. It's damiva.com, damiva.com is our website. And you can always contact me through the website as well. There's a contact form. And either myself or my assistant, Ash, will answer emails. If they're directed to me personally, I'll always answer them. And our products can be found in drugstores, health food stores, and grocery pharmacies across the U.S. and on our website as well as a store list, including CVS and Target, and we also sell online. So that's where you can find me and more about me. And then also Facebook is good for keeping up to date with our, you know, sort of most recent escapades. And if you just search Damiva on Facebook, we pop up right away.
I like that you're creating a new product for sleeping with melatonin in the cream. I think that's so exciting. I think I'm going to head over and buy some of that. Although I do fall asleep easily. I just love the idea of just having that extra help, and I can't swallow tablets. I'm the worst. So that's maybe the answer to my problems.
We could always, all of us, I think, could do with better sleep.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much, Amanda, for having me.
Okay. Thank you, listeners, for joining in this week, and I'll catch up with you next week. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com, or her Fit and Chips Facebook page. Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.